Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide to better cricket. It doesn't matter who you are or where you are. We are here to help you out for the next half an hour or so. My name is David Hinchliffe. I look after things here. And helping me to help you are two very fine cricket coaches. The first of which is the director of cricket at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Gareth. How's it going?
Very good, thank you.
Marvellous news, as always. Secondly, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers. How's it going?
Yeah, really good, thanks. All right down here.
All right. Glowing reports from the South Coast.
Absolutely.
Magnificent here.
Yeah, it's incredible here. After yesterday's snow.
It's basically, the further north we've got, the better it's got. That's what's happened there.
Have you had snow, David?
Yeah, yesterday we had a bit of snow. But you know, that's living in Scotland for you.
Absolutely.
There's always the danger. Let's go on to cricketing matters, though. And the first thing I wanted to talk about this week was a word that has a double meaning, and that's always interesting to me. That word is compromise. And whether you are a player or whether you are a coach, there are going to be times when compromise is a good idea, and perhaps there are times when compromise is less of a good idea. But I wanted to talk a little bit about that, explore it, find out what you guys think about compromise and how to do it well, and when you should avoid it and stick to your guns, and what are the dangers of compromising and what are the dangers of not compromising. So let's start by talking about that. So why would you find a way to compromise, Gareth, instead of sticking to your guns on things?
I have to say, mate, compromise wouldn't necessarily be high up on my list for many reasons. But yeah, if I want to compromise, and I would compromise on things that didn't go against my values, I would find it very difficult to compromise on some of my values, the things that I hold very dear. So things that fall outside of it, if I need to compromise on some of those slightly less belief and value-driven things, then I can do, if it's going to help motivate somebody or a group of players, or positively affect us having a decent outcome in a situation or in a game. So that would be my view on compromise. And it could be that you've got an example of a multi-sports player who, whilst you want to spend as much time with them as you possibly can, is doing other sports, and a compromise is to let that go, because actually there's some really good transferable stuff that's happening in those other sports that person can then bring into those into their cricket. So there's an element of compromise that I think can work. But when it comes to values, I find it very difficult to compromise on the values that I hold dear and that I coach against.
Often you have to, though, don't you, Lavers? There are times when, you know, things aren't going to go according to plan for many reasons, and you have to sort of reach a middle ground. What you do, I mean, for example, in my case, there's opposition to some ideas, and sometimes you have to, rather than continue to fight the good fight, you say, okay, well, on this particular thing, it doesn't matter that much, so we're going to go this way. Because bigger picture will, you know, on the long run, we'll start moving towards something that is less of a compromise and more towards your own way of thinking. So when I'm thinking about compromise, I'm really thinking about the positive side of it rather than the negative side. So have you got sort of positive examples of a way that you've compromised and managed to find a way through a difficult situation?
Well, I think that's where compromising it, and Gareth is kind of talking along a similar line, is you have a big kind of long list or a big stack of things that you want to happen, don't you? And there might be 100 things in this big pile that you want to make happen, if possible, in a session or over a period of time, or just in the way that people play their cricket or train or prepare or behave generally. So sometimes there might be that compromise that you can let slip one of the things at the lower end that would be nice if it did happen, but maybe isn't an absolute necessity, if that then has a positive impact on reinforcing or establishing something a little bit higher on the list. So if for the sake of losing one of those bottom bottom 10 things, so maybe the 99th and the 95th thing, you can really guarantee that your 1, 2 and 3 are going to be in place, then you can understand that there's a compromise there. And it is, it's going to be different, and different people will have different beliefs, and it might be that for one person the most important thing in the world is timekeeping. I think timekeeping is probably a very simple thing with it for a lot of people to understand is important, and a lot of people would have that somewhere on their list, probably fairly near the top as a someone working in the school or someone working within professional cricket or whatever it might be. Whereas something else on their list might be appearance or something like that. Just another thing I can think of that is part of how the things that we would have within our list at school, and they're not necessarily cricketing things, but they're just general behaviour and general standards as a person. So it might be that we can accept that someone maybe doesn't wear the right thing in one particular session, however they've made sure that their timekeeping is good, or whatever it might be. So it's sometimes a bit of a trade-off, but the thing is, where is your threshold? Where is that tipping point where above which you're not willing to compromise and below which you are willing to compromise? And that's what you've got to work out. And can you accept people being a little bit late if you know they've got other things going on and they're rushing around because they have a busy lifestyle, and when they get there to the training session, they'll give you everything they've got? Some people say yes you can, some people say no you can't. That's down to the individual coach or coaching team or group. So yeah, it's where you draw your own lines for these compromises and what you value, and everyone will have their own slant on how they perceive each situation or each compromise as it's presented in front of them.
And I guess that's where it gets interesting as well, is when one person is very strongly believes one thing and one person very strongly believes one other thing, and it's hard to find that other way of doing things. I'll give you a silly, well, maybe not that silly, but a small example from my own experience, which is football during the warm-up. I'm very strongly against football during the warm-up. I think it is something that you don't need, and it doesn't, the potential costs outweigh whatever benefits you can get, and you can get benefits in other ways. So I'm quite strong on that. I very strongly insist that we don't play football before a game, especially the first 11. But there is certainly one player, possibly more, but certainly one player who absolutely insists with all his might that football is the only way to warm up for a game of cricket. And so and so we're often at loggerheads. And I often say to him, well, look, you know, at the moment it's just me saying no football and you saying yes football. What can we do to find another way that where everybody is happy? But that's where it gets interesting, isn't it? When there is that, when there's no other way, it's one way or the other way, and you know, tough luck. And neither side is willing to take one step in any direction. And that's one of the most difficult ways to deal with that situation, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess you're trying to look at it and work out what are the benefits on his side from football. Can you take those benefits and apply them to something that you're happier with? Or what are the negative aspects of football, and can you take them away and keep them within something that he's happy with? And that is what compromise is going to be. Now, doesn't mean it's easy, because it sounds like you're quite against it, and he's going to be pretty stubborn in retaining it. So neither one probably wants to back down, and that's where compromise becomes difficult if there's no flexibility. But again, in conceding that yes, you can play football, but under these conditions, you might find a way in which you can do it, but you're taking some of the danger out of it, or taking some of the risk, or whatever it is that you see to be the option, and you're banking that then, and you're storing that for another argument or another confrontation down the line in which you know that he'll have to back down because you've given him an inch in this instance.
I guess it's about outlook as well, isn't it? If you're looking at compromises, you're giving up your position and you're compromising your overall vision. That is a failure if you have to compromise. But if you look at compromise as a way of finding a successful route through to something that everyone can be happy with, compromise is a good thing. So I guess it's about how you look at it as well. So you're not much of a compromiser, Gareth.
No, I am. I was joking earlier. But not on values, definitely. And it was interesting just hearing a couple of football managers at the weekend talking about values. There was that big bust-up between the Huddersfield manager and the Leeds manager, and Gary Monk, the Leeds manager, came out and talked about the fact that his opposite number had compromised his values of humility and dignity when the winning goal came in, and he stood up against that. And I actually think that's pretty good, to be brutally honest with you, because if we haven't got values and if we are constantly compromising on our values, then I think it's difficult for people to look up to us and to be led by us. So we've got to have those. But yeah, I mean, some examples of compromise. Working with KP around short ball was a great one, because, you know, my belief system around playing the short ball is that you needed to play at high levels against fast velocities. You needed to have a capacity to play it off a back foot rather than off a front foot. And initially when I was working with him, his view was that he wanted to have more of his weight going through his front foot and going forward when he was playing that shot. And that was, you know, great, because he was very successful at whacking it. And then we've got some great examples of him doing that. And we were a bit rigid, I suppose, him one way and then me the other. But of course, I decided just to back off a bit, because it was Kevin Peterson and he was doing quite well. And then naturally he faced up to that spell at the Oval against Brett Lee, where it was really quick on a quick pitch, and he came in at tea time, and that was the point where he wanted to explore both ways, really, of being able to hit off a front foot, because it can open up areas on the pitch and there'll be bowlers that he'd feel very comfortable doing that too. Somebody like a Glenn McGrath, he was very comfortable coming down the wicket and actually doing it from even closer than his normal batting stance against Glenn. But against Brett Lee in that context, he needed something more if he wanted to be able to cope on a regular basis against that type of delivery on that sort of type of surface. So then, you know, he backed down on his compromise a little. He compromised a little bit to explore those areas. And equally, you know, I allowed him to keep hitting some of the ones off the front foot for different contexts. So there's an example of where I have compromised. But yeah, when it comes to values, I'm not one for moving very easily, that is for sure.
Yeah, that's compromise working together with someone to find a solution, and then there's compromise where you're competing to try and beat each other.
Correct. Yeah. And as a coach, I think, you know, when it goes goes into different areas other than values, I think the compromise has got to be strategic, isn't it, to end up getting you to a place where that person has got more tools and more resources that they can pull up and use in different types of situations. And that was very much the intention at that point. And I continue to do that to the day with guys that come in with a view that this is the way it needs to be done. So I will compromise for a little bit to then expose that isn't the way that it has to be done in all contexts, to give them a bigger array of tools that they can pick out and utilise under different pressures.
Okay, just to finish off this section, we're going to have a quick piece of news, which is that the latest version of Pitch Vision Coach Edition, the software that goes with PV1 and all our Pitch Vision products, is out this week. It adds a lot of video analysis features, the main one being that now with one click you can get multiple screenshots from a video. So if you're analysing someone's technique, batting technique, bowling technique, and you want to get 8 stills instantly, you can do that with PVC. You click one button and you get 8 stills, so you can see, for example, with your bowling, you can immediately see their run up, their back foot contact, their front foot contact, release and follow through, all in one place very quickly without having to do much fiddling about. So if you are a Pitch Vision user, then you can get 3.4, which is the latest version, out now for free. And if you're not a Pitch Vision user, why not? Get on the train. The video analysis is better than it's ever been. Time now for us to answer some questions that have been sent in to the show. And as happens every week, we look at those questions, we answer them, and then we pick a winner of the question of the week, which is the prize of an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can email your questions to us for future shows at coach@pitchvision.com, and you can also get us through social media, which we'll tell you about towards the end of the show. The first person who's done that this week is Yash, and Yash says, while playing in the death overs, should we go for hitting every ball? In your mind, you kind of think that immediately, don't you? Should you try and hit every ball? Yeah, probably. I mean, you know, you're running out of time, aren't you? Go for it. What do we think? Is there more nuance than that?
Oh, I think we've got to have the intention of hitting every ball. And the most skillful guys are the ones that are trying to probably hit every ball for a boundary and then adapt off of the back of it. And again, you know, Coley's a topical one. Everybody's speaking about him, aren't they? But it was very evident in some of his interviews that that is very much his intention. And then making a secondary adaptation to be able to still utilise that ball to pick up runs. And it might be that he goes from being a looking to hit it out of the park to trying to guide it for two or to trying to guide it for one, and then as a consequence of that, he's actually timed it brilliant well, and it's gone for four anyway. So, but yeah, you've got to have the intention to hit. I suppose the other thing that comes into play is who you're batting with at the other end and how long you've got and what the scorecard is telling you, the scoreboard is telling you at that time. So if I've just come in to bat and I've got somebody on 70 not out and they're hitting it all over the place, and whilst if I get a bad ball, I'm looking to hit the ball hard, I'm probably looking to get off strike with a combination of hitting it out to the deep fielder or taking the pace off of it and dropping it short or to guide it into a gap to get that guy on strike. So it's not always simply a case of trying to hit the ball as hard as you possibly can in that context. It's trying to build up all of the different nuances that we've got to take into consideration when we're facing that ball. And I certainly want my best option to be facing more of those balls if I'm in a batting partnership. And some days that might be me and some days that might be somebody else.
I guess it comes to knowing your game and knowing what you can do when you're in that situation as well, doesn't it, Lavers? You have... you know, if you can hit sixes, you know, you're good at it and you know your areas to hit them in, then by all means look to do it. And if perhaps you haven't got that power or you're not that kind of a player or you need to grow a bit if you're young, then maybe you can't do that and you need to look at other options. But playing up to your strengths, making your strengths as strong as possible in that situation is important, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's going to be similar to most situations, isn't it? It's working out what's required. So whether we're batting first or batting seconds, what are we looking to achieve? So the situation's always going to be slightly different, but what do we need to achieve? What are the conditions I'm under here? And how do my skills apply to the situation we have now? If I'm particularly good at rotating the strike and I've got someone that is with me who can hit, as we've said before, then fantastic, I'm probably better off trying to get down the other end. However, saying that, if we're in a situation where we need a boundary, a ball, then, or a six, a ball, then obviously that's not the case. So we've just got to work up the individual situation. If we feel, though, that we are in a position where maybe we don't have the skills to do something, that's where we need to focus, really. So we could say, yes, you need to go and hit every ball, but more importantly, what are we going to do to prepare ourselves to do that? So if we're not currently someone who is able to hit the ball for fours and sixes to all parts, is there a reason why we can't do that? Whether it's a technical reason or a physical reason or a confidence belief issue, and can we then approach that head on and look at trying improving to make this job for us a little bit easier? Similarly, if the demands of a situation are that we've got someone on 80 down the other end who's hitting it to all parts, however, our ability isn't necessarily that strong when it comes to rotating the strike and getting bat on ball and doing that. Again, we need to approach that. So, yes, ideally, we would be hitting every ball, and yes, ideally, we would be good at hitting every ball. But in reality, we've just got to manage the situation, understanding what skills we have in place, and then beyond that, we need to look at improving those skills to make sure that we can adapt to any situation that is presented in front of us, whether it's in the first six overs at the top end or it's right at the back in the depth where we're hopefully going to be really ramping up that run rate.
Yeah, and if you know, just because you're in the death overs doesn't mean you need to score as many runs as possible either, does it? I mean, you might be in a situation where, you know, there's five overs left and you need 25 runs. You know, you don't need to clear the ropes every other ball then, do you? You know, you can win the game at a canter just by rotating.
You can place yourself under more pressure by doing the wrong thing and being a bit too ambitious sometimes. And you might think that I'll get behind the rate, the pressure goes up, but also lose a wicket, pressure goes up as well. So it's just assessing that situation and having an awareness of what is going on in the match now and what would happen if. What would happen if I could hit the next ball for four? What would happen if I got a single? What would happen if I missed it? What would happen if I got out? What would happen if I ran my mate out down the other end? So what if? And then maybe just considering, given that, how am I going to apply the skills that I've got to this next delivery and the next over in, that's ahead of me.
That's a great note about losing a wicket versus being behind the run rate. It's handy to know in what situation a wicket, losing a wicket, might, what effect that might have on the scoring rate of the team. Because we always say, well, you know, if you lose a wicket, that does slow the scoring rate, and that's certainly true at higher levels. But is that true at the level you play? And I've done a little bit of research into that on our team, and it's certainly not. There are situations where losing wickets doesn't affect the run rate at all. Obviously, if you get bowled out, it does. But losing two or three wickets in some situations that we play in doesn't affect the run rate. And if you know that, I suppose you can, if you're looking at it from a bigger picture, you can say to yourself, well, you know, often it doesn't matter if a guy who doesn't hit the ball as hard gets out, because a guy is coming in who can hit the ball harder. So even knowing that and having those nuances can make a difference. But obviously that's highly specific to the type of cricket you play.
Yeah, sure. I guess understanding your personnel and understanding who's next in, who's in after that. And that does, I'd still say, it does happen sometimes in international cricket, where maybe there is a hitter down the order and there's a guy that's very capable and maybe plays the long innings well. And at times we've seen it where Joe Root's played particularly well, but you sometimes think that he's very good through to, in one day cricket, sorry, he's very good through to kind of third and fourth gear, but perhaps he hasn't pushed on beyond that a great deal in recent times. And maybe if you need a little bit more and you've got your Stokeses and Butlers and those guys to come, you'd never want someone to get out, obviously, especially the quality of Joe Root. But you would think the scoring rate wouldn't necessarily drop if, even at that level, if the guys coming in were to follow Root should he get out. So, but yeah, that comes down to knowing your personnel and knowing what they're capable of doing, and again, what's required in the situation.
Okay, next question is from Raghu. And Raghu says, as a skipper of a team, how do you handle crunch situations in a game to make sure that things are under control? I absolutely love this question.
Yeah, to make sure things are under control at the crunch time. Well, again, it comes down to, I suppose, two things. How much have you prepared for it? Would be the first thing I'd say. So how much chance have you had to simulate, to speculate, to discuss those times in a game and what your reactions are going to be, would be my first thing. And then secondly, what do we do when we're in those pressurised times? So if we go to the first one first, I would say you can simulate those, you can prepare those, you can set up scenarios for those crunch bits of the game. Because most of our preparation is around general preparation. It's around being able to play straight, having a good technique. It's about fast bowlers, hitting lengths, bowling fast, all of that sort of stuff. And then you can put it into scenarios. So I reckon you can practice heaps of things. And I've probably said it on the show before, but we used to practice crunch games, not just being the last few overs, but also what happens if we get into a position where we've lost wickets early. How do we rebuild effectively? So we would set up a load of different scenarios and practice those in a middle practice where people are competing against each other and do them over and over and over again. And we had a game against Warwickshire years ago where Nintini was playing for the opposition. They had a really good bowling attack. We lost 5 wickets for 60, chasing 270 in a one-day game. But we knew that we had depth in our batting order, because in fact our number one from our championship cricket was batting at number 7, so he was out there, and we knew we had a bit of depth. And we'd practiced being in exactly those positions and how we go about building and building and building to take the game as deep as possible to then see what happens. And we ended up winning. And in the interview afterwards, Ian Blackwell, who was involved in the game, in the interview on Sky, said, well, we knew we had a chance of doing it because we practiced it over and over again from that exact position. So we can prepare for it. And then the second thing is to control ourselves. And generally in clutch or crutch situations where the game gets down to about those tricky times, we tend to speed up both our thinking, our breathing, our actions tend to speed up under pressure. So if we've got some strategies for dealing with those situations. And the easiest one is to really focus on your breathing and get your breathing under control. Then often everything else starts to slow down around us. Pressure makes us go faster, both in our cognitive processes, but also in some of the actions that we're trying to do. And the best players under pressure, and I think we see them in all sports on television, are the ones that can slow themselves down in that context. So that would be my opening gambit.
I think one of the simplest to say, but maybe one of the hardest to actually do in that moment, is to remember that these crunch moments are the ones that you will be talking about for the rest of your life in a cricketing context. So if you can't enjoy those moments, then you really are playing the wrong game. So enjoy it. When you're right in the middle of it, take that half a second to go, this is brilliant. This is what cricket is about. This is why I play the game, and if it all goes according to plan, we're going to be heroes today. So let's do that. And just having that focus and saying to yourself, you know, just smiling to yourself and saying, rather than thinking, what if the worst happens, thinking, I can't wait for the best to happen, then that enthusiasm will spread out to everybody, and you'll be able to do things that you thought you weren't capable of doing, just purely by having that switch of a mindset. Quite easy to say, bit more difficult to do, but sometimes you just need to take half a second and go, isn't this brilliant, rather than going, oh no, what if we mess it up.
And it's a smile, as well as getting that breathing right, a smile is often the sort of catalyst for getting yourself under control, which is what you see players do under pressure, isn't it? The really good ones, they almost think, you know, thank goodness that he's in this place, because I get the opportunity to show how good I am in these situations. Mm-hmm. Coley talked about it to NASA saying the other week, every time it goes over 300 and they're chasing it, it's an opportunity, it's a great chance for him to show how good he is in those situations, as opposed to try and avoid it.
Yeah, just imagine if you're batting and you look across to the opposition captain and he's having a smile and a laugh with the bowler as they change the field, what are you going to think to yourself? Are you going to think, oh great, I'm on top here? Or are you going to think, what do they know that I don't know? Because if it could go either way and they look relaxed and happy about it, then it's bound to put doubt in the mind of some people, isn't it? What do you think, Lavers? What kind of training do you do with your guys to sort of pile on the pressure and get them to be focused during those crunch situations?
Well, we do try and practice middle sessions, and it's probably a bit like Gareth said. You set something up and you create a position that is difficult to get out of. And then you let different individuals try and find a way out of it, and whether it's from a batting point of view or a bowling point of view. And generally you want to give them a target that's obviously achievable but not easy to achieve. And if you think about the situations that you're likely to get in, and you can recreate them and you can try and simulate them to a degree, at least it takes out a little bit of the stress of the thinking process. Because I generally think a lot of the time the stress that comes on a field is a bit of the unknowing, or being unsure of what they should be doing. And actually, if that decision's already been made, because we've been here before, we've talked about it, we've reviewed it when it happened last time, we've done it in training now, actually it's just getting on with executing your skills. And a lot of players are pretty happy doing that. That's usually, and not for everyone, but usually that's almost the easier part, because they let their body take over a little bit. And the stress and the doubt and the difficulty of crunch situations are often just in those thought processes and decisions. And it's, am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the wrong thing? Or literally, what should I be doing? But if you can have worked through those things before, then you're almost freeing someone up a little bit, and you're taking the responsibility away from them of the decision, and you're just leaving them with the shot or the delivery or whatever it would be. And as I said, often that's the thing they're good at, that's the bit they know they're competent at doing, and that's the reason they're in the situation they are, is because they're trusted to bowl the ball at the death, or they're trusted to bat at 6 and 7 and take it home, or be in whatever situation they're in.
Yeah, and if you do it, you know, you're a hero. And if you don't do it, well, you've learned something for next time. So you can't really lose either way, can you?
Yeah, very, very unlikely that if you find yourself, Gareth's example there of being 60 for 5 or whatever it might be,
as long as you go through, as long as you've decided on what method you want to go through, it's unlikely that if you try and do the right thing but it goes wrong, you're very unlikely to be the scapegoat there, because I mean, there's five guys above you who've already gone in whatever manner they've gone in. So at least if you're trying to do the right thing and you've discussed what the right thing is, the blame is very unlikely to fall at your door. So you can just get on with what you do, whether it's batting or bowling or fielding or keeping, whatever it would be.
Yeah, yeah. It's the difference, isn't it, between saying walking off and saying, you know, I tried to do it, it didn't work out for me today, but that was my plan. And walking off saying, why did I do that? And if you can walk off and say it didn't work for me today, but you know that's what I was trying, that was my plan, then you can,
yeah, at least
you can,
it gives you immediately a bit of direction, doesn't it, of like, I tried to do that, it was the right thing to try and do, but look, I've probably got to go and work a little bit harder. But at least you've got some immediate direction of where you want to go. And I think sometimes, like, generally you can almost understand when people say, like, you tried to do the right thing, you didn't do it, I can understand that. If someone does the same thing in a week's time and they try to do the right thing and they get it wrong, it's the same thing, that's not really acceptable, because you should be going away and you should be fixing it. So as long as people are leaving the field with an action plan, or leaving the match with an action plan of, like, I know what I want to do, I just need to get a little bit better at something, then you're in business and people are going to start improving. And these situations, which appear to be crunch situations for both teams, actually, you'll often find yourself thinking, well, we've been here before, it's not that much of a problem. And if you look at the likes of Virat Kohli, is a good example. Great example is any time WA play a 2020 game and they're bowling second and they've only posted 125, 135, whatever it is, they don't care, because they've bowled sides out for years, they've restricted side for years, they know what they're going to do. And it might look like they're under pressure every ball, because if they go for 10 and over, suddenly the game shifts, but it doesn't seem to bother them. They've been in those situations, they know what to do, they know who can bowl what, they know how to set the fields up for each bowlers, they know how to play the conditions, particularly when they're at home. So it's not actually as much of a stressful situation as it would seem, because they've been there before, they've done it before, and they understand how they're going to do it again.
And that is the end of the show for another week. There is just one more thing we're going to do before we leave, which is decide on the winner of this week's competition, the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And the two questions on offer were Yash's one about playing in the death overs and Raghu's question about handling crunch situations. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go Raghu's one. I think being able to deal with pressure and how you can prepare for pressure, because it is going to happen at some point, are really good things that we can learn from as coaches and impart onto our players.
Fantastic. Yeah, love that question. One of my favourites. And if someone else was listening to the show and they wanted to get their question on it, Gareth, how could they get in touch with us?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's correct. You can also get us through social media. The number one way to do that is via the pitchvision.com pages. You can message us there on the messaging system. But you can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and Twitter @pitchvisionacad. You can also listen to the show every week. It comes out on Fridays and it's free to download and listen. And you can do that by going into your favourite podcast app and doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. And if you want to get the show directly from the Pitch Vision website, you can do that. Download it, stream it, or get the show notes. Go right back to the beginning, whatever you want to do there. Go to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link for all the details. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Levis.
Cheers, fellas.
Cheers, guys. Thanks.